the deep truths of life are revealed to us only through contemplation. This is what is shown in this book. And this book, as it is mentioned in its introduction or epilogue, it is the book meant for those who are serious about their spiritual life, those who wish to realize God, to experience God. They have thoroughly understood the meaninglessness of the pursuit of various sense objects, and thus have come to a state where they want nothing but God and God alone. He mentions that the others who are desirous of seeing God but have not come to the stage where they feel like giving up everything for God, they also can be helped by reading this book, because gradually that awareness will come and it can be of use. Like we can buy, say, heavy blankets now. Are we going to use them in this summer? No, but wait for a few more months and then those blankets will become useful. So these truths may not be actually applied in life by some right now. They are not in that position to apply them. But if there is the right intent, then in times to come, they could become useful if they go on the right path. So let us begin with the prayers. God, please recite. God, unto whom all hearts be open, and unto whom all will speaketh, and unto whom no privy thing is hid, I beseech thee so far to cleanse the intent of mine heart with the unspeakable gift of thy grace, that I may perfectly love thee and worthily praise thee. Amen. As we were seeing in the last class, that one has to even give up the so-called good things. Spiritual life is certainly not bad life, but it is not a so-called good life either. The one thing common for the bad life or the good life, the evil people and the good people in the world, is that evil people, say those who cheat others, rob others, or are trying to trouble everybody around, they think that this world is real. So also those who think that let us make everybody around us happy, let us plant more trees, let us open more schools, let us work for the world peace. They are good people, but they also consider this world to be the aim and end of everything. The world is taken to be real by both of them equally. And a spiritual aspirant is certainly not bad, but is not good either in that sense, because spiritual aspirant seeks the truth. The truth is beyond the appearance of this world. The world, all the names and forms, they come and go. They, whether good or bad, they are not real. And therefore, he mentions here, we had seen last Tuesday, that beware of the good, holy things. Of course, the other, the evil and bad things, a person will automatically be at this stage beware of, will never go for them. And he sees that they are not right, they are bad, so you will not go for it. It is those things which are good, helpful, that a spiritual aspirant will think them to be harmless. They are good for spiritual life. And here the relativity of good and evil comes into play. Something is good at some stage, no doubt. Many spiritually illuminating things might have been of help to you at one stage. But at the next stage, they become obstacles, and so therefore they tend to be, you know, obstacles more, because you do not feel like giving them up. Those which are not good things, you know that they have to be given up, and you therefore strive for it. But then the so-called good things, you immediately remember how nice they have been to you, how kind they are, and so you do not tend to give them up. You see them to be nice, and they become then the nice bondage around us. Equally bondage, you know, whether it is a iron chain or gold chain, and the bondage part remains the same. In fact, iron chain, at least you see that, oh, it is not good, I have to get free from it. With gold chain, one may start thinking that chain as a nice piece of jewelry and not to be given up. And if these chains are taken to be jewelry, then we will remain bound by it all the time. That is why these things are to be treated as they actually are. And therefore, this question pops up. That if it is good, a spiritual aspirant thinks that if it is good, why should it be pushed beneath the cloud of forgetting? Cloud of forgetting is the phrase that we had seen last year while discussing these in the fourth chapter of this book. It comes up that if we want to see God, if we want to realize the truth, there is the cloud of unknowing between we and the God, what is called in Vedanta as Maya. All around us is this cloud of unknowing. In our day-to-day pursuits, we are moving below this cloud of unknowing. We are not able to see the divine because of this cloud. We want to see the truth, but just as we cannot see the sun if the sky is cloudy. Not that the sun is not there. In fact, we are able to see the cloud too, because of the light of the sun. So we can infer that there is sun, but because of the cloud we are not able to see the sun. And so it is this cloud of unknowing is between us and the goal, the God or the self. And our attractions are towards, because of this cloud of unknowing, we do not feel that that is the goal of life. Other things appear to be goal of life, like the various types of sense pleasures and different other things that we want to do in our lives, and they appear to be the goal of life. It is natural to get attracted towards these, and thus the chance of our ever going to penetrate this cloud of unknowing, and they are not there anymore. So therefore, this spiritual guide, the author of this book, suggests to the disciple that therefore you put a cloud of forgetting between you and all the things of the world. If you want to go above that cloud, then first thing to begin with is insert a cloud of forgetting. This terminology is unique, friends. I have not come across in any religious spiritual literature this terminology, cloud of forgetting. That do not feel, I mean, do not follow. You will feel, we all will feel, but let us not succumb to the attraction of the sensual pleasures. That is forgetting. Cloud of forgetting needs to be inserted between that. Otherwise, you see, if I want to go, say, towards east, and then there is another pull that is dragging me towards west, then first thing I have to do is to stop that pull that is dragging me towards west. Otherwise, my chances of moving towards east will not be there. And this is what is meant by this cloud of forgetting. We have to put this cloud of forgetting between us and the things of the world. They are not our goal because they are transient. They are just the shadows. You can never catch them, and even if you think you will catch, by the time you realize that you cannot catch them, you feel that there are some other shadows that you should run after. So the life just goes waste into that. So and this applies now to so-called good things too, that they have been helpful to you, no doubt, but now when they cease to be of help, they become further problem. Just imagine, you know, you are, say, climbing on a staircase. Now, say you climbed on the third step and you feel, wow, very good, this third step is so good, better than second step, it helped me to climb. But then if you get attached to the third step, you will not go to the third step. What happened? Oh, okay. Are you able to hear?
Yes.
Sure. Okay. So we have to go ahead. We have to even press this on this fourth step and move to the fifth step. We should not be spilling tears over this. Oh my, the dear fourth step, you have been so nice. I didn't want to leave you. No, I do want to leave you because I want to go to the top floor. That is my goal. That is my ideal. I do not want to get stuck here. So, this is the spiritual aspirant's case. As Swami Vivekananda has told again and again, stop not till the goal is reached. Arise, awake, and stop not till the goal is reached. There is a psychological situation that gets generated here, which is very common. We will see this, you know, that in the life, when this question was raised, that it is, why should I have to give up the so-called good things too? That why are to press down these good things beneath the clouds, the cloud of unknowing? It is, he says, that there is a two type of life that a spiritual aspirant has. An active life and a contemplative life. We all experience that there are moments of contemplation, there are moments of being active too. So there is this both in our life. Active life is considered very good for some. And the contemplative life, that is the life devoted to God, is good for those who have evolved beyond this. So, it is very much like Martha and Mary. You know, most of you are familiar with the biblical story, Martha and Mary. In fact, a very similar, exactly like that incident happened in Sri Ramakrishna's life too. Martha and Mary, two sisters, both adored Jesus. And Jesus goes to their home. They were both exceedingly happy. So many other disciples and followers of Jesus also came with Jesus there. And then Martha, this sister Martha, became busy in arranging for giving them some water, snacks, these, that, started running about. Whereas Mary just sat at the feet of Jesus. She was so overwhelmed by the coming of Jesus that she forgot everything else. Jesus is here, and she sat right at the feet of Jesus. After a few minutes or so, Martha felt she felt kind of pique. Felt rather, you know, what is this? I alone am working. This sister is sitting all the time at the feet of Jesus. Why should she not share some work? She should lend a hand in managing all this. And she just sitting there, what is this? Well, Mary was not doing it to avoid work. She became so overwhelmed by the presence of Jesus that it is nothing else than matters, you see. So Jesus tells, well, that her reward is higher. She is at a different level. Mary is at a different level. So people are at different level. Some are of very active temperament. And they have to work. They feel that unless they work, how the world can go on. Their goal is to make the world go on, as if that burden has been put on their head by somebody. So they are always active. Let me do this, otherwise there will be problem. Constantly working. Do not like to sit quiet. Even when they sit quiet, are thinking of some work. Let me go. So it is because that temperament of quiet is not, they have not reached there. So they are in active life. Now, active life and contemplative life, this kind of, you know, categorization also I have not seen in any other text. Very beautiful. But let us remember its limitations. These are for our explanation, you know, and not that you have to, a physical scientist start dividing, okay, this is active and this is contemplative, and not such cut and dried pieces of categories. Now, lower active and higher active, lower contemplative and higher contemplative, we have to see these two, these divisions too. And he mentions here that lower, of course, this lower higher is in the context only of spiritual evolution. It is not lower and higher is not in any other respect. It is people, everybody is at a different step on this ladder of spiritual evolution. So it is not a matter of condemnation of anybody. It is just the idea that people are different in their temperaments, different in how they respond to this inner spiritual urge. So that is how the spiritual evolution is. We are all different stages. So there is a stage that lower and higher only from that point of view. They are different but overlap with each other to some extent. That also is to be understood, that you cannot put a line, just as I mentioned earlier, that there cannot be just a demarcating line that here the lower ends and the higher begins, or here the contemplative begins, active ends. No, there is overlap. And so let us see how he the description is very sublime, that and we have to really deeply contemplate on these ideas that are presented. Active life begins and ends in this worldly life. That this is the realm of the active life. And this, the lower part of it, and the lower part of the active life, this is all worldly life, should not be, and that should not make us feel depressed. Yes, we are living in the world. Worldly life here only means that the names and forms, although they are unreal, we see them as real. And that is the act, worldly life. The action is possible only then and there. You can see this, that which you see as unreal, the activity cannot be possible in the things that you see as unreal. It is, for example, when you see it as unreal in a movie, you see a big fire coming up, something is on fire. You do not take out your phone from your pocket and dial 911. Why you do not take this action? Because you know that it is unreal. If otherwise you see somewhere fire is on, then immediately, even if it is not your house, you immediately call the fire department to, you see that there is a fire here. So why? Because you see it as real. You do not do it when you are seeing it in movie, because you know that it is unreal. So the action is possible only when you see the thing as real. When we see that it is not real, we cannot act in that. So therefore the active life pertains to this only, the life of unreality. Life of the sense perceptions, where we see names and forms. And lower part of that active life, what is lower part? Good and honest bodily works of mercy and charity. They are called lower. The other so-called unethical, there is not even mention of immoral bad deeds. And they, because they are being, as you become spiritual aspirant, you transcend them already. And that is, otherwise you won't come to read this book. So that those things are not even mentioned. And even the, what is mentioned as lower activity is also good, honest, truthful, charitable, and done with some loving ideas. That is all good, but lower, because there is no attempt there to penetrate this cloud of unknowing and going towards God. And that is where it, in the commentary of Keno Upanishad, introductory commentary on Keno Upanishad, Shankaracharya brings out this very forcefully, that how whatever actions we perform, how do we get the results of it? He says that the instinctive actions, that is the animal life, that is just whatever, you do not even think about them, they just happen, as you say. It is instinctive. But when you think about it, you have now choice to act according to likes and dislikes, and just go according to what you like, even with by thinking. It is not just by instinct, but you think about it and then go for what you like. So that activity will bring, will generate the results according to what you do. That what you like will be either good or bad, in the sense that it will hurt somebody or it will help somebody. If your intent is to help somebody, or if your intent is to hurt something, then accordingly you will get the results plainly like that. Then there is somebody who thinks that, no, I should not act like that. Human beings have this very special trait, and they consult the authorities, that let me ask somebody who knows. If you want to construct a building, then you go to an authority. Let me consult an architect, an engineer, because they know I don't know. If I am sick, then let me consult a physician who knows. So human beings, they take advice of some others. You will not find it in other animals. You don't see that a dog falling sick goes to another dog to consult. The owner of the dog, if the dog is a pet, then that owner takes it to a vet who is human. Not that there is another dog kept as a doctor to treat that dog. So it is, in other animal world you don't find this expertise and taking expert advice. This is a human trait, and therefore in human beings this idea of consulting the scriptures for what is right action and what is not right action is universally there. Let me consult scriptures before actually getting into the action. It comes specially into play when you need to consult about things that you are not able to see with your senses, where the senses have no entry, like what happens to me after death. You cannot see that by your eyes or cannot think about it logically. Your intellect and your sense organs are mute there. They don't have any place. So you consult what is called the scriptures. Scriptures means the words of those who have gone beyond this plane and therefore have seen, realized, experienced the transcendental truths. It is like somebody who has gone to Africa and seen the parks there. You ask them, hey, how is it like that there? You don't know, so you travel, and you cannot see by your eyes forget about beyond the senses. Our senses are too limited. I cannot see what is going on beyond a certain range. So I ask tell me, Uma, what is there in Alaska, because she comes from Alaska. So I ask, hey, how are you? Tell me how the days and nights in Alaska. So we consult others. So when the actions are done according to the scriptural injunctions, but without giving up one's desires, then what happens? Then according to those desires, they get to go to heaven because they have followed the scriptures. So they get good results. Having consulted the experts, you get good results. But again, it is a bondage. Then some who do this without any desires, then they get spiritual illumination. So the results of the actions, it varies according to how one uses them. So, and this higher active life is not just good, but spiritual, seeking the truth. So, truth is that which does not change, which is universal. It is beyond time and space. So, the search for this truth is, when that is the goal, then the actions done for that purpose, with that intent, they are the higher actions. And like you can do, for example, one can be a philanthropist and do some good work. Let me open a library for people. Let me open a shelter house for people who do not have place to stay. This is done as social service. A person who is seeking the ultimate truth can also take up these activities, but as service to God. Service to God who is in these people. So now it has a different turn, you see. It becomes worship. In fact, if you see worship, it is activity. It is action that is going on. Even repetition of mantra is an action that is going on. You offer, say, flower, you utter a mantra and offer a flower or offer incense stick, offer lamp and whatever, you know. They are actions, but they are higher actions because their aim is to realize the truth. And so therefore they become or they blend into what is called the lower part of the contemplative life. So in lower part of the contemplative life there is action coupled with contemplation. It is very beautifully explained in Ishavasya Upanishad that that the mere activity is a bondage, and just thinking about good things but not acting on them is a worse bondage. You have to combine the right thought and the right activity, then both of them they tend to have the result. If you say have a car but no gasoline, then the car will not run. And if you have gasoline but have no car to put it in, still it is not going to be useful for that particular purpose. So you, when both are combined, then you can have a running car, you see. So similarly, the right action and the right thought, when they are combined together, then they both become meaningful. So this lower part of the contemplative life tends to that it is earnest observation of human wretchedness and bondage, meditations on God's kindness, His grace, all that means the lower part of contemplative life. You think about it, that look, what is there in this world? As Bhagavad Gita says, think of this life. What is it? Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam. That it is, one has to take birth. It is a pain to remain in that little cavity for 9 months. You know how painful it is. And then, you know, birth, very painful thing. Painful for both the one who comes out as well as the one who makes it come out. So both feel that. So birth, then the disease. Life means so many diseases come and go, and that is how the doctors make their living too. It is so. That is the life. You see, you go. Pain, all the time pain. So think about that and think how through the grace of God one can go beyond it. So both these things are important. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, think about all these so-called pleasures in this world. How are they? So he gives the analogy of a fruit which is similar to an unripe mango in looks. It has a very thick skin and a very big pit inside. Only a little, some kind of a very sour gravy sticking to it. So, but it looks very attractive. People like it. It is, and so they go to eat it. It is called Amda. In Bengali, Amda. It is Amda. So, people make it that chutney and put it into many things. So, how is it? It is, what is that fruit? Only a thick skin cannot be eaten, big pit cannot be eaten, and then that little sour gravy that is sticking to it, if you eat it, then it causes colic pain in the stomach. So all the pleasures in the world are of this type, that it is mostly to be, things are to be discarded, thrown out. And whatever little you take in, that causes then the pain. So it is like that. So this is why we should think about it, so that the attraction towards those will get countered. And that is why it is to be, if we don't feel attraction, you don't have to think about it. But our mind, although it wants to go to God, it goes to the worldly things. Like, although I knew in my childhood that I should be studying and finishing my homework and so forth, the tendency used to, you know, go and play all the time. So my parents would tell, hey, look, if you do like this, what, you will fail in the exam, and then everybody will laugh at you. All your friends, now you are playing with, they will go to the next grade, and then you will be sitting in the same lower grade. Do you want that? And then apart from that, I will be giving you a good whacking. That is a different, means in addition to that, see what is going to happen to you if you don't study. So some sense would get occasionally instilled. It is, it is, some kids are very good. I unfortunately wasn't that good. So a lot of these reminders used to be there for me. So, and think of God's kindness, that it is how, if you hold on to God, how you will be uplifted from this. Feel the assurance of it. And so actions done with this attitude, they are both lower part of contemplative life, lower part of contemplative life and higher part of the active life. Now the higher contemplative life, higher in the cloud of unknowing, holding with the love only to God in His naked being. There is no thought to the whether the world is wretched, God's mercy, this, that. And we don't want God's mercy. We do not want from God. We want God, that's all. Wanting from God is a lower stage of contemplative life. I want God, like Mirabai in one of his, in one of her beautiful bhajan says that, well, whether the God keeps me happy, means treats me good or doesn't treat me good, I don't care. Whatever way God likes to keep me, let Him. I want God, that's all. It is so the God may kick me out or God may lovingly caress me, but I don't care. I want God and God alone. So at the higher level of contemplative life, everything else just disappears. The person is not even capable of doing the actions. It is the ordinary actions, they just drop off. You can see it in Sri Ramakrishna's life. He started doing the worship of Mother Kali. And slowly, because of the tremendous spiritual fervor to realize God, he always used to be in that spirit. And when he realized that presence, now the ritual of worship became impossible for him. Many started complaining that what, you know, instead of presenting the offering to Divine Mother, that offering that was kept there, and this priest, at that time he was called younger priest, the younger priest and the older his brother, he was the older priest. So sometimes while doing worship, he would feed that food offering to a cat. Why? This is a sacrilegious thing. Or sometimes would eat himself, saying that it is, "Oh mother, you think I should eat first, you insist I should eat first, okay." It is because he is seeing only Divine Mother. But for others, this was a sacrilegious thing to do like that. He was not able to continue doing that kind of rituals anymore, because now it is Martha is gone, only Mary is there, only holding on to God, that is there. All action cease. Sri Ramakrishna used to give an analogy of a woman getting pregnant. It is, please, you know, nowadays all that examples don't apply. There it is mother-in-law who otherwise would be very exacting, that the daughter-in-law should do all these works, says this, "Hey, did you do it or not? Why did you, were you just lazily sitting there? So much work is pending," would give a good thrashing now and then. But then when now she gets into the family ways, she is carrying, now as the fetus grows, the mother-in-law reduces her work. No, now you can't do that, you know. You have to be careful. This work is now no more for you. She herself, the mother-in-law, would take it up. So as the fetus becomes bigger and bigger, the work is reduced and reduced. And when the child is born, the whole work of the new mother is only to take care of the child. That's it. So that is how, when the devotion is not much there, all the works. When the devotion starts growing inside, then the other works, they start reducing. And when the devotion is grown so much, no work is then possible. It is like that. So this is how the higher level of contemplative life is there. So it is, and then he mentions that, here, let me read a little bit. He has summarized this in the lower part of the active life, a man is without himself and beneath himself. In the higher part of the active life and in the lower part of contemplative life, a man is within himself and even with himself. But in the higher part of contemplative life, a man is above himself and under his God. It's a very beautiful idea that in the lower part of the active life, a man is without himself and beneath himself. Means the person is just thinking of the world. I have to fix this, I have to do this, I have to fix the political system, it is up to me now. to get the new government properly. All that, you know, it is all the life, not about oneself, it is about the world. So that is the lower part of the active life. It is. And then the higher part of the active life, in the lower part of the contemplative life, a man is within himself and even with himself. Now the thought is, I have to fix myself. Fixing the world is goes away. It is so many things. A person was talking to me some time back. Well, I have fixed this person. Now I have to fix that person. Yeah, it is. And was telling me, earlier I had so much problem because of that person. So now, I have managed to fix that person. But then there are other two, three, I have to fix them. One by one, I will fix them all. So that is. So, I am not joking, but it really happened, you know. A very good devotee, it is. But that is the idea normally, the world needs to be fixed. I don't need to be fixed. I had told you that nice joke also, that an old man was being taken on, just on for a... in a wheelchair by an attendant, just for an outing on a beach, and a seagull, you know, there are seagulls around there, put a dropping on the head, and the attendant said, just wait, I'll just fetch a little water and towel, and he ran away. And this man said, look, this fellow, by the time he gets water and napkin, the seagull would have gone far away. So it is not that for him, he was concerned that the seagull needs to be cleaned. So that is how our attitude is, you know, that it is. The world needs to be fixed. I am fine, you know, the world needs to be fixed. Then in the higher part of the active life, no, I must realize the truth. I must see the God. It is that becomes the... So you are now within yourself and you are connected to God. That is the lower part of contemplative life. But in the higher part of the contemplative life, a man is above himself and under his God. The higher part, well, that selfishness is gone, only God is being seen, and there is still felt a distance between I and the God. And then in the next chapter, it is more about this. But he concludes that this chapter, that why therefore even so-called good things also are to be pressed beneath this cloud of forgetting. Why we should forget about these. And that this is the reason for which I bid you to put down such a sharp and subtle thought and cover him with a thick cloud of forgetting. He has personified that tendency towards, you know, to sticking to good as if that is a person. So, cover him with a thick cloud of forgetting, no matter how holy he may be, and no matter how much he may promise to help you in your purpose. And this is because love may reach God in this life, but not knowledge. And here knowledge means the knowledge of the world, the knowledge of the variety. And as long as the soul dwells In this mortal body, the accuracy of our understanding in perceiving spiritual things, most particularly God, is mingled with some manner of fantasy that tends to make our work unclean. And were it not for a greater marvel, it would lead us into much error. So, here he then begins telling that in chapter 9 that perceiving something beneath God, above you, this is a stage very high in spiritual development of a person, that you are actually now you are above yourself, you are seeing that just a little distance between you and God, you are feeling so happy, you feel that yes, now I have reached the goal, and then you tend to relax. That okay, now I can, you know, take a break. Now the things are within my reach. We all know the tale of the race between a tortoise and a rabbit. Now that rabbit ran fast and saw that the tortoise is far behind. I am almost there, so let me take a nap. And what happened, you know. So, in spiritual life also, one comes to a stage of that kind of dullness. This is how the success, relative success, deludes. Makes us complacent, and our enemies are actually waiting, enemies of our spiritual life are waiting for that moment when we become complacent. Now is the time to attack. It is in Keno Upanishad also you read that story, and this 9th and 10th chapter actually they are about this. Perceiving something beneath God, above you and below God, although it looks nice, gives a happy serene feel, spiritual aspirant has to transcend this too. It is difficult as there is happiness and peace associated with it. That oh my God, I feel my God, I pray to my God daily. Yes, God comes to me in my different visions, and one feels that we have achieved spiritual attainment. In fact, we start comparing that who amongst all my friends, nobody has come to such an elevated stage as I am. So, I have done enough now. It doesn't take too long, you know, this is something, of course, in that game you don't have much of a choice, but that game, where is that ladder and snakes, do you ever play that game, did you play? What it is, there is the ladder and the snake, the ladders are there, you go up, and now to the last that victory thing, only 2-3 more squares to go, and you feel I am there almost, but they have in the game they put a snake right there. And then it brings you down all the way. It is in spiritual life also. Therefore, complacency can bring down anybody. It is, one may be, you know, spiritually evolved. I may tell myself, I am a Swami, you know, and for such a long time I have been Swami. I have achieved so many things. Be complacent and you are gone in no time. So that is therefore it is difficult, as there is happiness and peace associated with it. I feel happy. I keep on self-congratulating myself. Wow, well done, my boy, very good. So it is. And thus, you don't feel that there is further need of pressing on this. But it has to be done. And this is what is in the chapter 9th, and also it is, but we will see it in the chapter 10. It is that how the pleasures they come in this life, and therefore they distract us. Even the pleasure of leading a spiritual life can distract us. It is told as one of the obstacles in meditation in many Vedanta texts too, that it is called Ananda Anubhava, that experience of the happiness of meditation. God is the source of happiness, and you are close to God now in meditation, so you feel happiness, and then you start enjoying that happiness, and then your meditation on God stops. It is that is how, therefore, one has to be very careful. We shall continue to see this in our next class. Any questions about this discussion? Yes, Charles. What? See, you were not there last time, last class.
Yeah.
You were there? Because nobody asked question, you were not there. So our star questioner was away. So
well, now I've forgotten my okay. I've gotten to the point where the world does seem meaningless, but I have no experience of God, so that seems meaningless too. How do you advance at that
point? Right, a good question, you know. If we feel that the world is meaningless, then there is that because of which you feel that which appears to be real. Why does it appear to be real? There has to be something real to make it appear. So that which is real, the world is meaningless, but why it appears to have some meaning? If we really feel that the world is meaningless, and then we will automatically turn towards God. That is for sure. We don't feel the world as meaningless really. Sometimes we say that, but what it means is that the world is it's not giving me enough that I deserve. So a sense of frustration and disappointment and resulting in depression, and that is a different thing, you know, that a person tends to commit suicide there. It is not that the world appears meaningless there. The world appears to be, you know, not just to me. It is torturous to me.
Well, it appears meaningless because I know that for every pleasure you have to have a following pain.
Yeah.
And yet I don't see any way out.
If you see this, you really see this, then you will start seeing the source of pleasure, where the pleasure was coming from. And that is God, that is the Self. Otherwise, you see, of course, that every pleasure is surrounded by pain. And so you don't bother about it. Okay, let me have the pleasures. The pain also I will take as a price. So we kind of gloss over it. And we don't see it as meaningless. So, okay, let me for now have the pleasure. And the pain is going to follow, I will deal with it when it comes. So, that is not feeling the world to be meaningless. So, it is different thing. So, let us conclude with the prayers. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tatsat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.